This is the 418th episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast, the podcast from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that gives you everything you need to know about the Atlanta Falcons. I'm D. Orlando Ledbetter, the Falcons beat reporter for the AJC, and we're going to title this episode, Just a Look at Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Falcons' opponent coming up on Sunday. The Falcons 2-1 will take on the Jaguars 1-2 at Wembley Stadium in London. If you're listening to us for the first time, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Bowtie Chronicles from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents...
Hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny...
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
All right, we're back here at the Bowtie Chronicles podcast, and we're going to get right into it here with Coach Arthur Smith. We wanted to know, Coach, from Coach Smith, what happened on those seven sacks against the Detroit Lions.
And so when you're looking at a lot of things, a game like yesterday, and I'll give Detroit credit, you know, we had to do a better job. We knew what kind of game it was going to be. It's a prideful team. They were coming off a loss, and you know, the first time on the road, they came out with a lot of energy. You know, we had a chance to do something, you know, those first two drives and make just get us going. We didn't. Credit to them. And I just felt like we were in quicksand, you know, with too many third and 14 pluses. It's going to be a long day. And again, credit to them. They made some negative plays, and it wasn't like it was our, you know, penalties. I thought they came out and their intensity, and for the first time in a long time, I did not think that we countered that and what was a sluggish and kind of ugly game, and we had a chance in the fourth quarter to steal some momentum back and put some pressure, and we didn't.
Good breakdown there from the coach. Coach Smith here. We're just going to go right into a film breakdown of the seven sacks. It wasn't a traditional seven-sack output that came in different forms and fashion, and here's what Coach Arthur Smith had to say about breaking down the seven sacks.
Three happened on the play action, you know, different issue both times. And one of them happened. The next one was probably somebody, you know, was a little bit trying to overcorrect it. And you just can't, you just. So obviously they happened. And then the third one, right, said we, you know, give him credit. We never got the back out. So we're going to hold that one. That one was a, you want to call it a cover sack, but we can certainly execute better. And then we had one, you know, you get in that situation right before the half. They bring pressure. We have a mechanism, you know, to try to avoid that. And that's a lesson learned. You don't want to see that. You know, the odds are small anyways, and second left in the half, but not to give them a momentum. Yeah, that's. And then the other right drop back and how they happen. Two were quick hitters on the rush. And then one was, and we held the ball and kind of countered in there and give Detroit credit. But that's kind of how they broke down. They're all a little bit different. I will say this for a young player, you know, you want to see sometimes, and not in an ugly way, but things are going to happen. And how guys responded, I thought, you know, Burge did respond. There's some other things, too, that with all of us. But that's kind of how it broke down.
Well, all right. That was great detail on that. If you were keeping score at home, I got three on dropbacks. The two quick hitters, those are when the guys were beat the Falcons right off the snap and were already in Desmond's lap. So you can fix those. And then the one he was holding the ball, and then And he caught another one, a drop back. So that's all seven. The drop back ones are, you know, hey, he's got to get the ball out to the hot receiver. Or and holding it too long, you got to get it out to the receiver. So that's four on the quarterback. And the two, the guys that got beat, you know, they can't get beat off the snap. You got to fix that. So those were the breakdowns. It was seven hits, seven sacks, and eight quarterback hits. And we saw that early against the Panthers as they got loose on the Falcons. So when we look at the Jaguars defense, we'll look at their pass rush numbers and see who they're going to try to unleash over in London. So that's something that the Falcons have to get taken care of here right away. Now, the quarterback, you know, 35 possessions, only five touchdowns. They haven't scored off the opening script, I believe. I'm going to go back and double check that. So, you know, slow starts. We wanted to ask Arthur about Desmond Ridder's slow starts in the game since he's become the starting quarterback.
You know, and so you look back at it, like, what are you calling, right? Like, what, you know, it's been a mixed bag. We went back this morning, looked at all the openers from the seven starts. Okay, scheme. You know, what are you trying to accomplish here? You know, yeah, absolutely. Because you got to look back, like let's jump start this thing earlier. Because you look at his numbers, I'll update them from yesterday, but whether you want to look at some of the advanced numbers, it's been pretty good. That sometimes in the half, right, moving the ball, and especially in the fourth quarter. Well, so, all right, what is it that we got to do to jumpstart? Clearly, we got to do something different. It's kind of been a mixed bag in the seven starts. And absolutely.
Now, the defense, they had a blown coverage, but then they tightened things up. It was 13-3 with a little bit under 2 minutes to go before half. And then the defense put together five stops. They forced four punts. Then Jesse Bates III had his third interception of the year. So they got five straight stops in a row and got the ball back to the offense against the Lions over the late second, all of the third, and then early in the fourth. But the offense couldn't get moving in the second half at all. So they wasted those efforts. But the defense did, like they did at Green Bay, they strung together some stops, which would normally allow the offense to get back in the game if they could move the ball. But that didn't happen in this game against the Lions. So we wanted to know from Arthur Smith if he's surprised with how well the defense is coming along, given all the changes with the coordinator and all of the new players.
No, even a game like yesterday, and that's the one thing too, where like those guys have been in some – you got some salty vets over there, right? Like, that's what you're relying on when you bring, you know, Bud in, David, Calais, Jesse, Caden. The old analogy, it wasn't their first rodeo on the road. You know, sometimes like that's what the expectation is. You know, we just, and I had a lot of faith in the plan of why we wanted to bring some of, you know, the coaches we brought in here. And it hasn't meshed together. Now, again, as we got to play more as a total team. I mean, that's what you want. Like last week, if you hold the ball for 36 minutes and have an efficient day, you're not putting a lot of stress on the defense. Now, yesterday, the defense, I thought, held the line for a long time. And then what happens, like I said, in an ugly game, when you don't go and steal that momentum and you got a chance to maybe steal one, at least put some pressure on them, we don't do it. And then eventually, right, they get the momentum and – and they got that touchdown late, but you know, you're right. And so very pleased with that side. There's some things, obviously, if you talk to those players, and that's got to be all our mindset. We all got to see what we can do better. But overall, like, it is comforting to know that the guys you brought in were the right guys.
Yeah, that's something they could build on. It's not perfect over on that side of the ball, but you know, they held them, and the Lions scored with 9:54 to go in the game to make it a 20-3 game. And, you know, that was pretty much the end because the offense couldn't get anything going there. So now the Falcons will move on to Jacksonville, who are 1-2. And we'll break down their record and their games here later on in the second half of the show. But here is Arthur Smith on Jacksonville.
They're a team that's going to come in this game, desperate, and because they got a really good coaching staff and they got a good team, a good talented players, a team that's right. They've invested in essentially, you know, four pass catchers, and the quarterback they took number one is a good player, and they played well at the end of last season. And we gotta play really well. You know, we know they'll challenge us, and it's a good defense scheme. I think Mike Caldwell does a great job. They've invested a lot in their defense too, and it'll be a big time game for us. But that's the challenge. Can we learn from what happened yesterday and not let that become a pattern?
Well, there it is. Jacksonville, they did finish strong last year, won the last five, went to the playoffs at 9-8, won a playoff game against the Chargers, and then went down to Kansas City in the divisional round. It's kind of, folks thought that was a breakthrough season for the Jaguars in the AFC South, winning their first title since 2017. Well, we wanted to talk to some of the players in the locker room on Monday, and we spent some time with Lorenzo Carter, Nate Landman, and Younghoe Koo. Here's what Lorenzo Carter had to say. I thought it was interesting about his take on the morale of the team.
Things are coming together for the unit with so many new people.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's a new system, new defense, and guys are buying in, though. It's different for some people, but we're starting to see the results and starting to see that the work we're putting in is paying off.
In the adjustments, against last week and this week, it looked like y'all were able to come out and, you know, get some stops there in the second half. What were the adjustments like?
Just fixing the little things, because it's not like we're getting beat on a lot of things. But the plays that we do get beat on, we take our time and make sure we get those corrected. So we just got to keep fixing those things and eliminating explosives.
And about the week going over to London, what will this week be like?
It'll be exciting. Everybody's excited to get a chance to go play another game, and then especially since it's in London, we get a chance to get away and just be one as a team and come together and get a win.
Have you still looked at the Jaguars at all?
No, not yet.
What do you know about them just generally off the top?
They got a good quarterback. Good skilled players. I mean, it's a good team. It's an NFL team, so they got a lot of good players, but we just got to come out and play our style of football.
Also, on Monday, we knew that Troy Andersen was injured and likely headed to the injured reserve list, and he was placed on injured reserve today. And Nate Landman will take over at linebacker. Here's what Nate Landman had to say when discussing if he was ready to take over for Troy Andersen at the inside linebacker post.
Ready to go if they have to come back to you?
Yeah, always ready to go. Always, you know, ready to go last week and ready to go each week. Prepare each week as a starter. And coaches do a great job getting us ready. And so, yeah, I'll be ready.
Mm-hmm. What was it, you know, I talked to you the Wednesday after that game. What was it like, you know, working with Caden inside?
Oh, it was great. You know, like I said, Caden's a great leader. Me and him, you know, we kind of run the show out there, and it's great to be able to bounce things off him and have confidence in him that, you know, he's going to help me and I can help him, and, you know, we can really just lean on each other to get the job done.
And Coach Gray was saying, hey, we might have to find a way to get you out there, but so he said we might have to find some three linebacker, some old 4-3 stuff, I guess, but how does it feel knowing that, you know, you got to be ready to go?
Yeah.
They didn't create the spot for you, but.
Yeah, obviously, this isn't the way I wanted to be on the field, losing Troy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, next man up mentality. And like I said, everyone on this roster is a starter, and everybody's just waiting for their opportunity. And now it's my opportunity to go, you know, make the most of the situation that we're in.
All right, Younghoe Koo, the kicker, missed the field goal there. The Falcons going to need all their points this year. So we wanted to discuss with him, you know, the trip to London and what does he do when he misses a kick like that and how they try to analyze it and break it down. Here is Falcons kicker, Younghoe Koo.
So what would be the routine? What do you remember most about the last trip over there?
It's a quick trip, you know. We get there Friday morning, that's a quick turnaround, making sure you're trying to do your best to get adjusted to the time a little bit. You won't completely adjust, but just making sure you're ready to go by Sunday.
What's the morale of the team after the first loss of the year?
You know, it is what it is, right? I mean, it's a one-week season. NFL season's like that every year, every week. Just hit the reset button and go back to work.
And on your missed kick yesterday, how'd you break that down?
I caught the turf a little behind. I just got to go back to a cleaner contact and hit a better ball.
And, you know, how do you try to move on when you know they're going to need you again later on there?
Yeah, just going back to the process and the foundation and the preparation that I put the work into. I'm going to make kicks, I'm going to miss kicks, and then it's just back to the work that I put in, and then I'm going back to those basics.
And, you know, how does Marquise talk to you at all or anything, or did he just kind of let you to your process and you get with Lim and Bradley and just work on the operation?
Yeah, make or miss, every week we watch the film together, and then we just look at how we can do things better, how we can do things, you know, always trying to improve, whether it was a make kick or a miss kick. All right, I could have hit a really bad ball, but it somehow went in. It's like, all right, like, I'm not going to be satisfied with that. Let's work on how we can improve even on the makes or misses.
This is the Bowtie Chronicles from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
I'm Ernie Suggs.
And I'm Ned Ravone. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
All right, we're back here at the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. And before we move on, we want to bring to your attention this great offer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The special offer is for our podcast listeners. If you subscribe today, you can get 3 months of unlimited digital access for just 99 cents. That's all of our sports coverage, politics, breaking news, investigations, food and dining, and so much more on AJC.com. Plus, you get access to our e-paper and our assortment of newsletters. So join our community by going to subscribe.ajc.com/podcast. Again, that's subscribe.ajc.com/podcast. So you always know what's really going on. All right, we're back here at the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. We're going to take a little quick spin around the NFC South. The Falcons are 2-1, the Saints 2-1, Tampa Bay 2-1, and Carolina 0-3. The Saints blew a 17-point lead at Green Bay, and then the Eagles had a little too much DeAndre Swift for Tampa Bay last night on Monday Night Football, and they beat the Bucs. Now, the Falcons will be playing the Jags in London, who are 1-2. The Saints will host Tampa Bay, which is 2-1. And, of course, Tampa Bay will be at New Orleans. And then the Carolina Panthers will host the Minnesota Vikings in a battle of 0-3 teams. Now, a couple news items around the NFC South. Derek Carr was injured, AC joint. Don't know how long he's going to be out. Jameis Winston took over, drove it down to get Blake Groupie into field goal range, but he missed a 46-yard field goal with 1:10 to go. The Panthers lost 37-27 to the Seattle Seahawks. Bryce Young was inactive with an ankle injury, and the Red Rifle was 34-58. Andy Dalton is the Red Rifle. 34-58. 361 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 88.4 passer rating. Receiver Adam Thielen had 11 catches for 145 and 1 touchdown in that game. Tampa Bay lost 25-11 to the Eagles. Swift had 16 for 130, former Georgia Bulldog. Second game over 100 in a row for him for the Eagles. And then Baker Mayfield was 15-25 for 146, one touchdown, one interception, 73.1 rating. Now, the series between the Jaguars and Falcons, this will be the ninth meeting. Atlanta leads the series 5-3. Atlanta won the last meeting 21-14 on November 28, 2001, down in Jacksonville. And the Falcons have won the last four meetings with the Jaguars. So let's look at the offense here. So they lost that game 37-17 to the Texans. But Travis Etienne did his job. He had 19 carries for 88 yards on the season. He's 49 carries for 205 and a touchdown. So he's averaging 4.2 a carry. Calvin Ridley has 13 catches for 173 and one, had two drops and two false starts in the Houston game. Evan Engram has 18 catches. He's the leader with catches with 18, and they got all three people with 173 yards receiving. Evan Engram, Christian Kirk, and Calvin Ridley all have 173 yards. Engram's got 18 catches. Kirk has 16. Ridley has 13. Those are the main weapons for the Jaguars, who opened in 22 personnel against Houston with two tight ends. Luke Farrell was the first tight end with Evan Engram. Then the two wideouts, Ridley and Kirk, and one running back, Travis Etienne. Let's move on. Walker Little is the left tackle. And Trevor Lawrence this year, he was 27 of 40 for 279, a touchdown and an interception, and an 85.3 rating against the Texans. On the season, he's 73 of 113, 64.6 percentage, 736 yards passing, two touchdowns, two interceptions, and a 84.5 passer rating. Defensively, they opened in a 3-4-4, according to Jesus, and some of the key defenders for the Jaguars are Trayvon Walker, the first overall pick in 2022 out of the University of Georgia, 12 tackles so far this season and one sack. He only had 3.5 sacks last year. First overall pick, I'm thinking they're expecting a little bit more production this year. The wheel linebacker is Josh Allen, 13 tackles and three sacks. He leads the team. Inside linebacker is Foyer Ulukon, former Falcon, off to another good start with 37 tackles. He led the league in tackles in the last two seasons with 192 and 184. Now, they had some blown coverages, too, against Houston. The cornerback, Darius Williams, was in the area, but they seemed to put it on safety, Rashawn Jenkins. He's one of the heavy hitters back there, 6'1", 200, 20 tackles. He has 8 career interceptions. Now, one of the backups for the Jaguars in the interior of the defensive line is, some of y'all know him from the podcast, our cousin Jeremiah Ledbetter. He played 25 snaps against Houston and 7 special teams snaps. He's got 4 tackles on the season, backing up along that defensive line for the Jaguars. The punter is Logan Cook. The kicker is Brandon McManus. And the punt and kickoff returner is Jamal Agnew. Very dangerous returner. And then just a couple notes on a note on London here before we finish up with the Jaguars. Falcons were over there in 2021. And beat the Jets 27-20 on October the 10th of 2021. And that was, if you all remember, that was the Kyle Pitts breakout game. He had 9 catches for 119 and 1 touchdown to help them beat Zach Wilson and the New York Jets over in London. All right, just got a few more notes here on the Jags, who they opened the season at the Colts with a 31-21 win. Then they lost at home to Kansas City 17-9 and of course to Houston 37-17. They have 5 sacks. Allen has 3. Clavion Chaisson from LSU, he has 1, and Trayvon Walker has 1. So Chaisson has got 4 career sacks. A lot of people wanted him in the first round back in 2020. He went to Jacksonville on the 20th pick. So that's their defense. Now, I just got a couple more notes here that Jamal Agnew, Pro Bowler, one-time Pro Bowl, one-time All-Pro, dangerous returner. Special teams are going to be a factor here. He's returned 4 punts for touchdowns and 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns. He's one of the best in the league. So the Falcons coverage units will be on alert. Now the game against the against the Texans for them, they had over 4. So it's a dangerous, dangerous team. They got weapons. They got a defense. They got to put it all together. They had over 400 yards. But the turnovers, drop passes, and penalties killed them against Houston. You know, blown cover. They lost. They missed a field goal. They had a punt return for a touchdown. So they gave up 10 points in special teams play. And they blew a couple coverages on some touchdowns. So, that's 14. That's 24 of the points right there. So that's how you get beat. 37-17 is when you help the other team out. Now, can they clean up all that stuff here before they get over to London? Ridley was a part of the problem with 2 drop passes and 2 false starts. So, you know, he's got to fix that. And then Williams was in the area, Darius, of the busted plays, but looked like Coach Peterson wanted to put it on Rashawn Jenkins. So those are the Jaguars. They present a big challenge here. They did their team kind of like the Falcons, but they got the quarterback first in the draft. Then they went out and spent money putting the weapons around them. They made the trade for Ridley. They got Christian Kirk. They had Evan Ingram on a tryout last year, and they ended up re-signing him. So they got weapons. Travis Etienne was a draft pick too. So, you know, they fortified the line and got their weapons. And on the defensive side of the ball, they've been using the draft over there with Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker. They did use some money on Foye Olukan in free agency. So it's been a mixture of free agent spending and drafting for the Jaguars, who were, again, 9-8 last year and went to the playoffs. And is one of the playoff teams on the Falcons roster this year. So this was a game when the schedule came out that you thought, okay, the Falcons are going to have a tough time over in London against the Jaguars. The Jaguars have gotten out the gate slow at 1-2, and the Falcons are trying to bounce back from their first loss of the season, where quite frankly it didn't look very good on the offensive side of the ball. And you had a blown coverage on the defensive side of the ball. So, but those are things that get worked out early in the season as the team start playing more games. It's good to get to the 4th game mark when you have a lot of things on tape now, and you can kind of, you know, zero in on, you know, some areas that you need to improve on and where you, you know, need to focus as you move forward. It's pretty clear the Falcons got to get the passing game going. We knew that coming into the season. They were 31st in the league last year. We'll start ranking them next week after the 4 games. But it's pretty clear that they're doing a good job of stopping the run on the defensive side of the ball. Got to not let out the explosives. Pass rush is still not there yet. Got 3 sacks and 20 quarterback hits. So it's pretty clear some of the things are starting to come into focus on what the Falcons need to do to, get better and try to make a charge here in this NFC South. That's, you don't really see any heavyweights in there. So there's a way, there's a path, and there's a way to get there. Got to just keep trying to improve on both sides of the ball. But this will be a big test over in London. If, the Jaguars want to help the Falcons out, I'm sure they'll take the help, because they surely helped out the Texans last week. So I'm thinking Coach Peterson's going to have his team ready to play and clean up some of those miscues that they committed in that loss to the Texans. So the Falcons are going to have to, you know, take it to the Jaguars if they're going to pull off the victory across the pond. So with that, we're going to get on out of here and ask you to have a great rest of your week. And remember, it's 9:30 a.m. on Sunday. Don't sleep in. I don't know. Maybe you go to early service or go to later service, but the game's at 9:30 a.m. from Wembley Stadium across the pond in London. Take care.